Hello and welcome back to Season 5 of the Emirates Lab podcast, the show from Fletsamar, where this year we're on a mission to uncover the ways market research shapes the world around us and learn how to navigate a fast-changing commercial landscape. I'm excited for this episode to be joined by Paul Hudson, CEO of Fletsamar and recent Insight 250 honoree, who's somewhat becoming a regular here on the podcast. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Chris. Good to see you again.
Before we jump into today's topic, for those listeners who might not be aware of who you are, could you share a bit about yourself and what you do at Fletsamar?
Yeah, so I run Fletsamar. So we're a tech-led organization that tries to put customers at the heart of decision making. We use that with a combination of technology and service to large brands across the world. And I've been running Fletsamar now for, we've been Fletsamar branded for about 8 years. And before that, I ran a market research agency for the previous 15.
And you've been talking quite a bit recently about survey quality and participant experience. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and why it's important?
Well, I think the key thing we all keep forgetting is there's a massive value gap in surveys where participants don't perceive the value of answering them in the same way that we perceive the value for organizations. So we understand why we need them and why we're asking them. The problem is participants don't see that at all, and they don't get any value from doing it. And because of that, we will continue to see response rates fall and continue to have challenges in getting the data that we need, which is lost commercial value, ultimately, at the end of the day.
Mm. So what are some of the things that are really damaging to the participant experience?
I mean, there's a lot of different things, right? But length and question structure are probably, in my opinion, big things in there. I think the difficulty we have is there are lots of commercial pressures in the reality of a research project. I know, for example, my team are very skilled researchers, but when they're putting projects together, they have a lot of competing demands on their time when they're trying to write surveys. They're trying to balance project objectives, with the question structure, the length of the questions, the time, all of the client needs. Lots of things are going in there, and they don't really have a lot of time there to sit down and necessarily spend the time crafting from a participant perspective.
Mm. So what does a good survey look like from a participant perspective?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, the difficulty from a participant is, what do they want? They probably want very few questions. They probably want to get to the end very quickly. And they want to know why they're answering, what's in it for them. All of which, I think, highlights that value gap. Often, they're the opposite. They can be very long questions that they don't understand. And they don't often understand why they're being asked all of these things.
So what are some of the things we can do to improve survey quality, to improve the experience of the participants taking surveys?
So one of the things that I've been trying to experiment with our team is introduce something called the Survey Quality Score, or SQS, as I've called it for short, which is just trying to create that counterbalance in that design process. So it's just one or two simple questions at the end of the survey asking the participant how they felt about that experience. And by doing that, hopefully, it creates a counterbalance and creates that focus internally on what the participant needs from it, not just what the research team needs from it.
Mm. And then that feedback goes back into the business and we can learn what makes a good survey, what makes a bad survey.
Yes, there's some of that, but there's also some about benchmarking. I think the key thing for me here is to create some kind of benchmarking element, because the benchmarking element is what might unlock that competitive spirit and motivate teams to do things differently. I think it's not just about learning what the survey does, it's about benchmarking it and then motivating us to do it. What we've got to do is motivate teams to create a culture of design, measure, and improve. And often those are achieved when you put benchmarking and metrics in place.
Right, because we know roughly what makes a good survey already. We know short, we know ask questions that make sense, but without the data there to back it up.
It is, and we do know. I mean, we do take a lot for granted. We do assume a lot of information when designing surveys, but you're absolutely right. A lot of people have told me we all know what's good. It's the commercial pressures that change it. We need a counterbalance at that point, effectively giving the participant a seat at the table when we're having the conversations about the survey and making those design decisions. And if we know it's being measured, benchmarked, tracked, reported, that'll give us a different motivation.
And I suppose it also makes those conversations with stakeholders a little bit easier as well. You know, if you want to add this question in, you're going to suffer this to the experience, and having that benchmark to back up those points is really valuable.
Absolutely, absolutely. Without that survey quality score as a metric or a benchmark, it's very difficult for a project manager sometimes to bring that into the conversation with different stakeholders. And then they can show it, they can say it, this is the impact of what will happen, which I think is valuable. Then people can make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this really gets back to some of the basics of market research in a way. You know, we often look at stakeholder needs, business needs, and overlook the survey design process because the survey is functional.
It is, and you've only just look at all of those customer feedback surveys, CX feedback, CX experience, customer experience feedback programs that exist. They're all there designed to improve the customer experience. And yet often the experience of them themselves isn't that great. And the commercial reason for doing it is often a metric, maybe an NPS score or a bonus system that's based around it. It's sometimes lost in that commerciality that actually the purpose of it is the customer. And the customer's there wanting to give feedback and still slightly bemused at the 10 or so questions in that case that they're being asked that are a bit tricky and a bit odd.
I think that's a really interesting point as well, that sometimes the surveys we end up showing to participants have absolutely no benefit to them. They're purely for internal purposes. It's because of bonuses or performance scores tied to those metrics. But in reality, there's no benefit to the participants for going through that. How do you, design that into a business, design that customer first decision making?
Well, I think things like the SQS are one way of doing it, to sort of, as you say, bring that into the conversation with the stakeholder. I do think we've got to look at the way we use technology more in our survey designs for the benefit of the participant, rather than just for the benefit of the researcher or the analysis. By which I mean, how do we use the technology to make that experience better, to not ask as many questions or ask them in a different way or structure it in a more engaging way, or even to give feedback in the moment to the customer? That's the reason why they're asking it. So answering the surveys is because they want to give you feedback. We've got to get better at listening to that need.
I think one of the interesting things for me as a marketer researcher has been knowing about a survey when I see one. You know, a pretty common, it's fairly easy to spot a bad survey in the wild, and then not necessarily recognizing that when you're writing one. That disconnect is it's quite strange sometimes.
It is, and I think we do all take that for granted. We all take it for granted that we are good researchers, we know what good looks like, we know what good surveys. That's not the problem. The problem is more the commercial reality, the context around how these things get designed, get run, get fielded, and sometimes are there for a long time. I've run trackers before, and you can't change questions in a tracker because it'll change the metrics potentially. And all of those things will affect the design. So we all know what good looks like. I don't think that's necessarily the contention here. It's how you make it work for the customer in more situations.
And then on that commercial point, I suppose there's a challenge as well around survey volume. There's a common criticism that we create too many surveys because there's so many different needs within the business. But at the same time, a lot of those results don't often travel far. They might get used in one debrief or one project. How can we increase the lifespan of App Insight? Does that have any role to play in this as well?
Well, it has a role to play without a shadow of a doubt. You're absolutely spot on. The lifespan of an insight is or research data itself is often too short. We often go looking for more data when we potentially don't need it. So there's a lot of things we can be doing in there. And again, technology can help, but it's also about changing the culture of businesses to understand how to look for data, how to reuse data. And it's our role as researchers and insight professionals to almost become decision consultants, to be there to help people make the right decisions. And when I mean that, I don't mean make the decision for the business. I mean, guide them in how to use the data, how to use the research, and how to increase the lifespan. It then becomes our responsibility to do that. And we don't probably spend enough time thinking about that very good point you've made, which is about the lifespan of an insight.
So how do we go from project managers, researchers, to decision consultants?
Well, some of it is the mindset, how we go about setting ourselves up. We have to challenge ourselves to set ourselves up in different ways. It's about stopping and thinking about the role, resetting that role, and then redesigning the processes we use. We talk about project managers and needing to be decision consultants, and yet still today we'll talk too often about briefs and debriefs. The problem with that is a brief and a debrief, it bookmarks the beginning and the end of something. It creates a time box project. So we have to challenge ourselves and things like that. How do we get out of that straitjacket that we place ourselves in? How do we make the business understand our role differently? So we've got to challenge ourselves to do things differently, I think.
I notice as you're talking there, around this idea of challenging ourselves. I've also seen some of your work recently that I've been involved in too, for transparency, around customer salience. And on that customer salience journey, challenging ourselves, our conceptions is the first step of that. What can you tell us more about customer salience?
It's really about trying to do that thing about moving our role to become decision consultants, to put what we define it as being is the propensity for people to think about customers when they're making decisions. And if you turned it into a metric, it would be that. How many times are people thinking about customers when they're making decisions? In short, it's not high enough. So in 2022, for example, Forrester reported that only 48% of people made decisions based on analysis and data. That's a real problem. That means even with the amount that gets spent on research and insight today, nearly one in two decisions are made without even thinking about customers. So customer salience is about changing that. And to do that, we've got to think less about the project, as you said, and think about how we create cultures that embrace customer and make the customer relevant to the stakeholders, increasing the salience of customers across the business. So we've got to challenge ourselves to think differently. We've got to create programs about customer awareness so they're aware of customers. We've got to connect them directly with customers and data. And we've got to be able to collaborate with them in the way that they can use that data. In short, that's really what customer salience is about. It's about building that relevance of the customer to decision making.
I think quite often when we talk about culture building and these kind of activities, it can feel quite abstract. It can feel quite difficult to understand what makes culture. How do I affect that as an individual? What would your advice be to researchers trying to get started with customer salience?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Culture is a big thing. And on ourselves, on our own, we're not going to change the culture of a business. That's really not going to happen if it's just us. So we've got to break it down. We've got to do it like manage it like a project, break it down into steps, break it down into manageable chunks. And that's really what I was saying about challenge. If you just sit and break it down, what are the steps you can take today? They're always steps that we can take today to remove parts of our budget that maybe aren't being used effectively, remove parts of the project cycle that potentially aren't working for us in the same way that they once did. Take debriefs, for example. They used to work great if we were in the office 100% of the time, but if we're hybrid working, a physical debrief might be hard to arrange. A debrief itself creates a project end. So how do we do that differently? So it's things, little steps. We can all take little steps to do it. And if we can measure the impact that those little steps have, then we can bring other people with us and make champions of other people in the business.
I think it's really interesting that in both of these topics, in survey quality and participant experience, but also in customer salience and culture building, we've referenced measurement as being an important tool for delivering change. And when I think about that, I guess, you know, over the last 20, 30 years, there's been a huge change in the way business works. You know, pre-internet, post-internet, pre- and post-financial crisis, pre- and post-pandemic even. And yet we're still thinking about project management, about processes, which have been around since the 80s or earlier. And it's interesting to see what some of these might look like redesigned.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's an interesting point that you made about the metrics in there. I guess maybe that's because we're researchers, we like metrics. But I have to be honest, as a manager, sometimes I don't like metrics. Sometimes you find it hard trying to put metrics to things and measure them. In both of the things we've been talking about today, putting a metric and measuring customer saliency is actually going to be hard to do. So as a manager, it feels quite difficult and quite challenging. But I think there in itself shows why it's needed. Even the survey quality score has its challenges. Just trying to agree wording on questions across a team is difficult. Trying to ensure that the question is asked consistently in every survey will be difficult. So it's quite interesting. We need these metrics, but as a manager and a business owner, I have to admit, I find it difficult to put metrics on so many things. But in the conversation we've had today, you see the importance of it because it is something that helps drive change.
Right. So there's a place for metrics, but we also have to be comfortable to a degree in the qualitative side of things, the messiness of how businesses work.
You do, and I think that's always the difficulty with metrics is always trying to find that happy balance where you know that you need a metric, but also being comfortable with the debate around the metric. Sometimes people do just take the metric and see it for the narrowness in which it's measured. The reality of business is quite messy, and it will be for all of our listeners who are struggling with building customer salience or getting the customer into decision points. The reality is quite difficult. Again, that's the need for the metric. The metric will help us know where we are and where we're not. But you do have to be comfortable to dive into the qualitative evidence around it. Mm.
And speaking of our listeners, we are coming up to the end of the show. So what is, out of all of the things we've covered today, what is the one thing you'd like them to take away to remember from today's episode?
I mean, we talked about two or three things there, but I think the key thing for me is the participant. We have to create an age of the participant in here, because they're the lifeblood of business, and we want customers to be heard. So we have to live by that and make it a good experience for them and make sure their voice is heard.
And we look forward to seeing what you do next with the survey quality score, with the participant experience. We'll be keeping an eye on it, and hopefully maybe in another couple months' time, you'll be back and we'll have a little bit more to talk about as well. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining me today. Been great to chat again.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks.
And thank you to everybody listening too. I'll be back next month with Harry McGill, creative filmmaker, to find out how to tell compelling data-driven stories. But until then, I've been your host, Chris Martin, and this has been the MRX Lab.